It's great to be here on a sunny day in Kent, the Garden of England. And I used to play football around here for years, the uncompromising, no-nonsense, hard-knocks training school of the Kent Boys League. So I'm very familiar with this part of the world. But after the elections last week, I have to say, it's a part of the world that the Tories are increasingly unfamiliar with. A county not just green and pleasant, but now also turning red. And by the way, on a day like this, I really am sorry that we're doing this indoors, but we'll be out there before too long. But today we are here on serious business, because this is a community on the front line of one of the gravest challenges we face as a nation. Illegal migration is a test of seriousness for all governments and would-be governments. And not just here, right across the world. A symbol, as I said in my conference speech last year, of a more volatile world, an age of insecurity. Now, it's a really hard nut to crack. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. Tackling organised crime is always hard, especially across borders. Now, I know that from my work at the Crown Prosecution Service on drug smuggling or counter-terrorism operations. And let's be clear at the start. This is a criminal enterprise that we are dealing with. A business that pits nation against nation, that thrives in the grey areas of our rules, the cracks between our institutions, where they believe they can exploit some of the most vulnerable people in the world with impunity. A vile trade that preys on the desperation and the hope it finds in its victims, the common humanity that ultimately it seeks to extinguish. And not so long ago, back in 2016, I went for myself to visit the refugee camps on the outskirts of Calais. It was winter, I think it was February. It was absolutely freezing. The ground was mud, sodden with rain and human waste. And I saw children there, two in particular in my mind, who were the same age as my children. Back then, that was age 5 and age 7, huddling together in a tent that offered almost nothing in the way of warmth. A desperate situation. Then I went home and said goodnight to my children, the same age, each in their own bedroom, with the central heating on. And I came away from that day profoundly depressed. And I would defy anybody to go into those camps and come away with any other reaction. That camp represented a monumental failure across nations. People had been brutally let down by governments, of course, not just in terms of the awful conditions, but also because the failure of our asylum system had encouraged a false hope, a hope that had unequivocally made those people more vulnerable to exploitation. Gangs were hovering around that camp that day when I went, using it as a job centre for modern slavery. Now, that particular camp has gone, but the smuggling business remains. The exploitation remains. The peril, as Yvette said, the children dying in our waters. Just 3 weeks ago, a 7-year-old girl, the same age as one of the children I saw in that camp. That all remains. And no matter how good anyone thinks their intentions are, turning a blind eye to this business, not understanding how important a rules-based asylum system is for tackling that exploitation, for removing the criminal business model, if you like, that is not a progressive and compassionate position. It is the complete opposite of a progressive and compassionate position. This problem must be tackled. These gangs must be stopped. Our asylum system must be rebuilt. Our borders must be secured. But to do that, to finally grip this problem, we need to turn the page and move on from an unhealthy interest in gesture politics that has long defined this policy area, and which has dragged the Tories as a serious party of government onto the rocks of their own delusion. Let me give you a few examples of what I mean by gesture politics. September 2020, the Sun newspaper reports that the government is exploring the procurement of Yamaha jet skis. The plan, allegedly, to patrol the English Channel and tow boats containing asylum seekers back to France. October 2020, the Financial Times reports that the government is undertaking a secret consultation with the maritime industry. The plan this time, constructing floating walls or maritime fencing in order to block small boats. And presumably, in the busiest shipping lane in the world, all other boats. December 2020, and Yvette will remember this well, Chris Philp, then the Immigration Minister, at the Home Affairs Select Committee in front of Yvette, refusing to rule out the use of wave machines to blow back the boats, a policy that had by then somehow managed to find its way into the newspapers. I could go on. There is plenty more material. Sound cannons, sonic weapons, various deployments of the Royal Navy, against advice and with little success. The list is endless. Yet here we are. Over 8,000 people have made the perilous journey across the Channel in small boats this year, on track to surpass the record set in 2022. Now, I want to be clear, I'm not impliedly criticising the reporting here. If a government source tells you that it's going to build a wall in the English Channel, you better believe that is a story. But the question this record must raise is whether the latest gimmick, the Prime Minister's Rwanda scheme, can really be taken as a serious solution to this important challenge. I don't think so. They will get flights off the ground. I don't doubt that. But I also don't doubt that this will not work. A policy that will see just a few hundred people removed to Rwanda a year. Less than 1% of the people who cross the sea in small boats every year. Less than 1% for £600 million. That is neither an effective deterrent or a good use of your money. And then you look at the rest of our border system. And honestly, it's like a sieve. Just the other day, the Home Office admitted it's lost track of thousands of people that they think have no right to be here. And yet, still, the government refuses to do anything than focus all its time and energy propping up Rwanda, throwing good money after bad, hoping it will get a few flights with, what, a couple of hundred migrants off the ground. Because it's symbolic for party management, for the election. It's gesture politics. £600 million for a few hundred removed. That is gesture politics. And Britain can do better. Labour will do better. We will end this farce. We will restore serious government to our borders, tackle this problem at source, and replace the Rwanda policy permanently. And today we launch our plan to do that. A new approach to small boat crossings that will secure Britain's borders, prevent the exploitation by tackling it upstream and smash the criminal smuggling gangs. And as the first step in this plan, a new manifesto commitment. We will set up a new command with new powers, new resources, and a new way of doing things. Border Security Command. Now, this is about leveraging the power and potential of dynamic government based on a counter-terrorism approach which we know works. An end to the fragmentation between policing, the border force and our intelligence agencies. A collecting of the standards. So the border protection becomes an elite force, not a Cinderella service. An essential frontline defence that communities like this can depend on. To do all that, Border Security Command will bring together hundreds of specialist investigators, the best of the best, from the National Crime Agency, the Border Force, Immigration Enforcement, the Crown Prosecution Service, and yes, MI5. All working to a single mission, all freed from the cloying bureaucracy that so often prevents collaboration between different institutions. Now, I've seen this firsthand at the Crown Prosecution Service many times. Good ambition is never enough on its own. But I've seen how, with determination, with leadership, with single-minded focus, agencies can work together and deliver results. And not just within one country either. We can cooperate across borders. And that's not some kind of weakness. It's absolutely essential. These criminals do not respect national borders. I mean, when I was at the Crown Prosecution Service, we had prosecutors posted in Pakistan working on counter-terrorism operations, in the Caribbean on smuggling, in West Africa disrupting the flow of drugs coming from South America on their way to Europe and ultimately to Britain. And these operations are not easy. Just think about conducting a raid. I've been through this so many times, seen it in real time. If you've pooled all the intelligence in one place, if you've spent weeks, months, years mapping out the patterns of criminal activity, bringing in prosecutors to help assess the vital evidence, then you cannot have your raid in London going off a single minute earlier or later than the coordinating raid in Paris. So yes, we need more cooperation on illegal migration. We need a new partnership with Europol. We need access to real-time intelligence sharing networks that are so crucial to our security, and which the government so casually threw away as part of its botched Brexit deal. And that's why I've already been to The Hague with Yvette to start pushing for a new security pact with our European partners. But look, it is also my firm belief, based on years of experience in this area, that we also need new and stronger powers to bring these vile criminals to justice. Now, in some areas of criminal activity, now counter-terrorism is the most obvious, we have made the decision that the crime justifies tougher measures. And make no mistake, we have reached that moment with illegal migration. These vile people smugglers are no better than terrorists. They're a threat to our national security and a threat to life. And it's time we treated them as such. That means new powers that, as with would-be terrorists, can be used pre-conviction with High Court approval, that can limit the ability of the gangs to conduct their vile business before arrest. Powers that will allow us to shut off internet access, close their bank accounts, trace their movements, using information provided by the intelligence services. Or powers like stop and search at the border, or raiding and seizing evidence before an offence has taken place. Let me explain why. Because seriously, we use the term small boats. But the boats are not, for the most part, that small. The gangs now use dinghies that are on a scale way beyond anything you would see for legitimate recreational activity. And we should be working with our European partners to seize those boats, seize material here in the UK to collect further evidence, turn over every stone, use every reasonable power. And that is my message to the smugglers. These shores will become hostile territory for you. We will find you. We will stop you. We will protect your victims. With the Border Security Command, we will secure Britain's borders. And we will also rebuild Britain's broken asylum system. As I said at the beginning, I believe in a rules-based asylum system. I believe that a system that processes claims quickly and humanely, and that finds ways, without squeamishness or cruelty, to detain and remove people who have no right to be here, is essential for security, fairness, and justice. It is a form of deterrence in itself. Because until we're seen around the world as a country that has a firm grip of the process at our border until we're busting the Home Office backlog, arriving at decisions quickly without a fuss, so we can return people who have no right to be here, then yes, Britain will be seen as a soft touch. And it goes without saying, we do not have that effective deterrence at our borders at the moment. Our rules-based asylum system isn't working. Ask anyone in this part of the world. That much is obvious. So it's not hard to see why the Prime Minister might want a path to deterrence without the hard graft, the boring graft perhaps, of fixing the wider system. But I'm afraid, like so much of what he says these days, it's magical thinking, a symbol of the unquenchable Tory desire for the shortcut, the easy fix, the sticking plaster, gimmicks, not serious government. Let me spell it out again. A scheme that will remove less than 1% of arrivals from small boat crossings a year cannot and never will be an effective deterrent. It's an insult to anyone's intelligence. And the gangs that run this sick trade are not easily fooled. In fact, by allowing vast numbers of people into the country via this route, running up a perma backlog of nearly 100,000 people, refusing to process the claims so that even if they have absolutely no right to be here, they cannot be removed. Billing the taxpayer for expensive hotel accommodation, because like Hotel California, there's no prospect of ever leaving. No prospect of a decision for or against. Then let me be clear. The government has achieved the complete opposite of what they claim. A travel lodge amnesty handed out by the Tory party. And that is warmer and safer than spending winter under canvas near a beach in northern France. And if you don't think that's what the gangs are telling the people they exploit, you've never met one of these gangs. So no, we have to restore integrity and rules to our asylum system. We have to clear the backlog so we can return people swiftly. That is the path, the only path, to real deterrence. That's why we will hire hundreds of new caseworkers for the Home Office, and we'll do it straight away. We'll create a new fast-track returns and enforcement unit that will make sure the courts can process claims quickly, and we will save taxpayers billions. The £8 million we spend every day on hotels. An £8 million a day message that Tory chaos has a cost. Labour will stop the chaos. Labour will bust the backlogs. Labour will rebuild our broken asylum system. Now, these plans will be fiercely resisted. Of course they will. That's par for the course on this issue. I have no doubt that the British people fully support a rules-based asylum system. No doubt that the fair-minded majority want a system that can secure Britain's borders and uphold this country's fine tradition of providing sanctuary for people fleeing persecution. But this is a debate that has been captured by polarising voices. So every solution must run a gauntlet of bad faith objections just to get a hearing. Now, on one side of the debate, it comes from people who claim they want to reform the asylum system, but in fact they want to get rid of it. People who believe, based on their principles, that people should be able to move across the globe wherever, whenever, and however they want. No matter that in this age of insecurity especially, that would lead to chaos, that quite apart from any other objections, does nothing to advance global justice. Meanwhile, on the other side of the debate, some people pretend they want to reform asylum, when what they really want is for the British state to act with impunity, to tear up rules on a whim, because ultimately, they do not want us to take in any asylum seekers whatsoever. I don't think there's many Tories who truly believe that. But what I do think is that they're too weak to admit that plainly. Too weak to say that this is not and never should be a world we live in. Because Britain should show leadership on global issues that drive insecurity and migration. Britain should step up to tackle climate change, famine, and conflict. We do have a duty to work with other nations. And the state should not have untrammeled power against minorities or anyone. Our rules-based system should align with global rules that protect individual human rights. That is in our interest and the right thing to do. And so rebuilding our asylum system has become a test of political strength, a trial of leadership to resist the voices who fundamentally do not want to build a functioning asylum system. A question: can you prioritise at all times the politics of practical solutions? And can you reject the politics of performative symbols, the gimmicks and the gestures? Now, this is the story of what has happened to this government. The explanation of how a party that cares about illegal migration, there's no doubt about that, finds itself with a record of failure as total and stark as this. It isn't just rank incompetence, though it is that. It's also about who the Tories are now. And I'm afraid to say it's also about our politics as a whole. A culture that's part of the water in Westminster, that rewards the grand gesture, the big talk, while disregarding the detailed practical action that over time moves a nation forward step by step. Take Northern Ireland. Because in my lifetime, there is no more powerful example than that. And I was there, in the room, helping create a police service that could work for all communities, trying to move a nation slowly but surely towards the hard work, the long work, the patient work of real change. Now, I don't want to stretch that analogy too much, but that is what the hard graph of change means to me. And it's the kind of approach that tackling small boats requires now. So I say to the British people, if I am elected to serve this country, if I earn that privilege, I will turn the page on Westminster's talk tough, do nothing culture. Not just on small boats, not just on migration, on everything. And I don't know if that's a new politics or whether it's a return to the bare minimum you should expect. But if you vote Labour, that is what you will get. And if you don't believe me after 14 years of broken promises from the Tories, that's understandable. But as the country's chief prosecutor, I smash the terrorist gangs. And I know we can smash the people smuggling gangs. I dragged my party away from the allure of gesture politics. And I will do exactly the same to Westminster. No more gimmicks. The character of politics will change. And through that, we will deliver higher growth, safer streets, an NHS back on its feet, more opportunity in your community, cheaper bills in your home, and secure borders for our nation. An asylum system rebuilt, the criminal gangs smashed, the exploitation of some of the most vulnerable people in the world prevented, an end to the chaos. A turning of the page, a politics returned to service, and a careful, patient, determined renewal of our country with Labour. That is the future you can choose. That is what serious government can deliver. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you all very much. I'm now going to take a number of questions from the media. I'm starting, Beth, with you, Beth from Sky.
Thank you, Keir Starmer. You say you're going to end the talk big and do nothing type of rhetoric around small boats. So let me ask you this. Boat crossings hit 30,000 people in 2023. If you win an election, what's your target number for crossings by the end of 2026 once your scheme is up and running? And last week, you told me you wouldn't continue the Rwanda scheme, but you did not commit to stopping flights on day one of a Labour government. So will you commit to that right now? Thank you.
Well, Beth, on the numbers, we've got to get those numbers down materially. I think, let's be absolutely clear, nobody should be making that perilous journey. It's not in anybody's interest. And nobody who's serious about politics should suggest otherwise. It is not progressive or compassionate to allow people to cross in that way and to lose control of our borders. So we need to bring those numbers down drastically. The question is how we do it. It is a trade that's being run by gangs. And I absolutely refuse to accept that it's not possible to take those gangs down. Now, I spent 5 years working with others on operations to take down terrorist gangs and to take down gangs that were running guns and drugs. I do not believe for one second that these gangs are more sophisticated than the gangs that we took down, the terrorist gangs. So I refuse to accept that this is impossible, which is why we want to set up this command. I refuse to accept this work can't be done. I refuse to accept that these boats, which are basically being made to order, can't be intercepted. They're being held on the continent and brought to the north coast of France. So I am absolutely convinced that this can be done to get those numbers down. We will scrap the Rwanda scheme. I said that to you when we last met last week, the time before last. That means ending the scheme absolutely, flights and all. It is not going to work. It is an absolute waste of money. It is a gimmick, not a solution. And that, the point of the last point of my speech is to say I'm not prepared to have a government, as we've got now, that is run on gimmicks, because that is not producing the change that people so desperately need in this country. Thank you so much, Beth. Anoushka, can I come to you?
Thank you. Anoushka Astana, ITV News. Keir Starmer, you clearly want to reach out across the aisle, but how far are you prepared to stretch? Is Nigel Farage welcome in this new Labour Party? Your shadow health secretary has suggested maybe we should draw the line at Liz Truss. So is everyone with politics up to her welcome?
Well, look, I'm very pleased to welcome Natalie to the Labour Party. You heard for yourself the reasons that she took a very difficult step. It's a very difficult thing to cross the floor of the House of Commons from one party to another. Nobody just does it without a huge amount of thought. And Natalie's conclusion, having thought about this profoundly, is that Rishi Sunak has effectively lost control of the borders and that the Tory party is characterised by incompetence and the Labour Party has changed. I think that's a very powerful thing to have said. It's testament to the hard work that we've put in the Labour Party. And this changed Labour Party ought to be a place where reasonably minded people, whichever way they voted in the past, feel that they can join with our project to change the country for the better. And so it is an invitation that we should be less tribal in the pursuit of a better country and invite people to our party who want to join in our project of national renewal. And I'm very pleased to be able to extend that invitation, not just to Labour voters, but people who voted for other parties in the past, because I genuinely believe that reasonable-minded people want their country to do better, want progress for themselves, their families and their communities, and that they will want to join the hard work, not the gimmicks, the hard work that this new Change Labour Party will bring about. Thank you, Anoushka. Chris? Look, I'm not going to go into... I think that's the last person who'd want to join this Labour Party, but I'm not... You know, a list of names doesn't help anyone, but Nigel Farage won't want to join Labour. But there is a serious underpinning point that actually, if we're to renew our country, we do need to ensure that we carry as many people with us as possible. And I genuinely think that most reasonably minded people across the country, who may or may not be into politics, we think about it all the time, most people don't, do want a better country for their family, for their community, and they want the country to go forward. And what I want is a decade of national renewal where people say, I may not be tribally Labour, I may not have always voted Labour, but I actually think this is a good, serious proposition about improving our country. And I make no bones about that. That may be because I came into politics late in life, because I didn't spend my whole sort of formative years in the tribal politics of Westminster. But it matters to me that we're able to have a project which reasonable people feel I can get behind that. Thank you, Anushka. I'd better give slightly shorter answers, otherwise I was going to be here all day. Chris, that's no reflection on your question.
My answer can be as long as you like. Chris Mason from BBC News. Can I push you, Keir Starmer, on the specifics of what success looks like? You talked there about getting the numbers down materially. What does that mean? Does that mean halving small boat crossings? Does that mean eradicating them entirely within a first Labour term? And to be specific about the cancellation of the Rwanda scheme, can you answer explicitly, does that mean no flights taking off from the moment you become Prime Minister?
Let me deal with those in two parts. Look, we do need to dramatically reduce the numbers. Obviously, I'd like it to come down completely. I'm not going to put a false number in it, but I'm not going to shy away from the fact that this needs to materially reduce. These numbers need to come right down. And to do that, we have got to stop the vile trade that is running it in the first place. Now, I have seen that done, as I've said, you know, in relation to terrorism, in relation to drug smuggling and gun smuggling. It can be done. And when you do it, you stop, in a terrorist case, you stop a planned operation or whatever it may be. One of the proudest things I did at the Crown Prosecution Service was Operation Overt, which was a plan to bring down seven aeroplanes at the same time as they were crossing the Atlantic. You can take very effective action and therefore to reduce those numbers. But it does require serious coordination, serious action of the sort that we've set out today. And this is the complete opposite of a gimmick. I'm not going to pretend this isn't hard work. That's why I said at the beginning, I'm not going to pretend this is an easy thing. You just flick a switch and this is... But it is hard work based on my experience of having done this in relation to other gangs. And I, as I say, I do not accept that this outfit, this operation is any more sophisticated than the ones that I've already had to deal with, as others have dealt with. But look, so far as Rwanda is concerned, we will cancel the scheme. We don't think the policy is going to work, and we think it costs a fortune. So, of course, that means we won't operate the scheme at all. I'm not interested. It's a gimmick. I'm not going to flog a dead horse. I'm going to waste my time on gimmicks. And this is about political capital, because the Prime Minister has chosen to put his political capital, which is considerable, behind the Rwanda scheme. I would put my political capital into the setting up the command and working with other governments to ensure that it works effectively. And that is about choice, but that's the choice I would make. Thank you, Chris. Natasha from LBC.
Hi, Sakir. Natasha from LBC. Can I just push you on the timetable for this? You've just said you're going to scrap the Rwanda plan. Is this going to be in your first 100 days? And just on the reaction from your own MPs to Natalie Elphick's defection, it's been one of shock and anger for a lot of MPs. Jess Phillips has said it's like being punched in the gut. One MP is reported to have cried at the news. Are you concerned that she makes you a very easy target for Tory political attacks and makes you look like a man that doesn't stand for anything?
Firstly, on the timetable, look, we're going to get rid of the policy straight away. I'm not going to continue a policy I don't think is going to work, which is going to cost a fortune. I'd rather use the money that's being thrown at the Rwanda scheme and put it behind the command that we want to set up. And the command can be set up very, very quickly as well. It doesn't require primary legislation. Some of the powers I've outlined are already in primary legislation. Others will require some legislation, which I think we can pass very quickly. So I see this as a very fast timetable to get this off the ground. And in relation to Natalie, look, this is a very important and significant crossing of the floor for the reasons that Natalie has set out. And I think anybody reading the words she said this morning would be persuaded that this is a very significant thing. You've got a Tory party that is losing votes, losing MPs, losing councillors, losing mayors across the country. It's a Conservative Party that's on its last legs. It's out of road, out of ideas. And that is why I genuinely think the mood of the country, and Natalie has picked up on this, is for change and a general election. And that's why nobody can understand why the Prime Minister is clinging on by his fingernails to power for as long as he possibly can. He should do the decent thing, read the room, and call a general election. Thank you, Natasha. John from the Mirror.
Hi, John Stevens from the Daily Mirror. Do you think that safe and legal routes should play a role in stopping the Channel crossings?
Look, I mean, we have, when it, Afghanistan, Hong Kong, there have been routes set up. But I think the main and the better, the really most effective way to stop the crossings is to break the gangs that are running this in the first place. Because they are making a huge amount of money exploiting very vulnerable people. And they're doing that with thinking that they've got impunity. And that is going to be the most effective way to stop this vile trade. And that's why I've put all of my focus today and will put political capital behind the measures I've outlined this morning. Thank you, John. Martina from The Sun.
Thank you, Sir Keir. It's Martina Bett from The Sun. Justice Secretary Alex Chalk said today that he believes European Convention on Human Rights should adapt to meet the migration crisis. Would you be ideologically opposed to European-wide reform of the ECHR? And on the UN Refugee Convention, do you think there is a need for a new, better global asylum framework? Thank you.
I think it's a mistake to think that it's the international instruments, such as the European Convention on Human Rights, that are the problem. I don't. By the end of this year, there'll be 100,000 people who've arrived whose claims can't be processed. Now, that means they can't be returned. That's not the European Convention that says that. That's because the government's not processing the claim. I'll give you an example. There'll be people there from Bangladesh. In a sane system, they'd be processed and returned to Bangladesh. But they'll actually stay in the UK because they're not being processed. And the government can't say it's the European Convention that's stopping. They're choosing not to process the claims. 100,000 people. The Travel Lodge amnesty. What's going to happen to those people? We're all paying for their accommodation. And the government's only answer is, well, Rwanda. Well, to get 100,000 people to Rwanda on the basis of the scheme as it now is, would take 300 years. And that assumes nobody comes in those 300 years to add to the 100,000. That is how broken the system is. So Alex Chalk, I respect. But to say that the European Convention of Human Rights is the problem is a broken asylum system. Process the claims and return people who absolutely shouldn't be here. It's not rocket science, it's mundane. But it's the most effective way to deal with this problem. Thank you so much, Martina. Harriet from the Daily Mail.
Harriet Lyne, Daily Mail. You said you want to replace the Rwanda policy permanently. What are you going to replace it with? Do you actually have a plan to deter migrants, or are you just replicating the small boats command which the government has already introduced?
I think stopping the gangs, get people in boats, is the most effective deterrent. Because you can't actually make the crossing to get here. At the moment, the government is not securing the borders and stopping people arriving in the first place. It's saying, assuming you've got here, because we've lost control of the borders, assuming you've sat here for a considerable period of time, we might send some of you to Rwanda. And they say that's going to be a deterrent. Well, since Rishi Sunak, he did a victory press conference. Some of you will undoubtedly have been there. This was 2.5 weeks ago. Since then, thousands of people have come. Since the Act got royal assent, so people are vulnerable to go under the Rwanda scheme, thousands of people have come. So the evidence that this is a deterrent, compared with smashing the gangs in the first place, is simply not there. I think processing the claims and swiftly sending people back to countries of origin when they've no right to be here is a deterrent, because you made all that journey, you've got here, and they sent back straight back to where you started, because you've got no right to be here. That isn't happening. The biggest deterrent is that it's a pointless exercise and you go back where you started. But that's not happening. Returns are down 40-something percent under this government. That is not a deterrent. That is why we've got to fix this with really serious solutions. Thank you so much, Harriet. Michael from the Daily Express.
Sir Keir, thank you very much. You spoke about swiftly returning failed asylum seekers. But where are you actually proposing to send them to? Are you proposing to do a deal with the Taliban in Afghanistan or Syria?
Well, Michael, if you look at the countries that people are coming from, there are obviously countries in there where people can be returned without any sort of returns agreement. Bangladesh, India. There are plenty of countries. You don't need a returns agreement to send people back to a safe country. Afghanistan is different, I accept that, as is Syria, as is Hong Kong. But for many of these countries, you don't need a returns agreement. Bangladesh is a classic example. Why are people who come here from Bangladesh not being processed, sitting here, not going back? The government isn't doing it. And so this is not difficult territory. It's actually get on, roll your sleeves up, process the claims, and get this system functioning properly again. And we can make a material difference. Afghanistan, I grant you, is a different proposition because many people who came from Afghanistan are fleeing from the Taliban. And we all remember what the situation was like 2 years ago. That is why there is supposed to be in place a scheme for those fleeing from Afghanistan to find safety. But we shouldn't overestimate and talk up the difficulty here. It's basic competence, seriousness, not gimmicks. Thank you very much, Michael. I've got Charles from The Telegraph.
Hi, Charles. Will you seek to negotiate a returns deal with the EU if and when you get into government? And do you believe that you can get one? And would there have to be any quid pro quo in order to achieve that deal?
Well, Charles, firstly, on the back of the last question, it is perfectly possible to return people to country of origin rather than the EU without an agreement with the EU and without an agreement other than basic consent from the country that is being dealt with. And we must never lose sight of that. We obviously lost the Dublin Agreement and that needs to be replaced in some shape or form. I would accept that so there can be returns. But let me be absolutely clear, that does not mean, because the Tories then jump in and say that means joining the EU scheme. That doesn't mean joining the EU scheme. We are not going to do that. We're not a member of the EU, and I'm not interested in joining that scheme. But I'm, you know, press on this point that actually returning to country of origin, which is the most effective thing, is done with the consent of the country that we're sending people back to. That is not difficult. Thank you, Charles. Alina from The Guardian.
Hi.
Eleni
Correa from The Guardian. You've spoken about the importance of Natalie Affix's affection to Labour. Will you now extend an invitation to all Conservative MPs who are unhappy with the government to enter defection talks with you?
Well, that'll be a long list. look, I think, as I've tried to set out, I do want, if we're privileged enough to come in to serve, to head up a government that is absolutely focused on a decade of national renewal. And I do want people who don't traditionally identify with vote for the Labour Party, maybe have voted for other parties in the past, to feel that that's something that they can subscribe to and be part of. Wherever that is, Natalie has made a decision on that and set out in clear terms why she's made that decision. You know, I'm sure there are many other Tory MPs feeling defeated by this government. I mean, I don't know what the latest list of those that are standing down, but it's pretty high. And I don't think we're at the end of that list. They can tell, as well as anybody else can, they can see for themselves it's a government that's out of ideas, out of road, out of steam, and that we need change. But my broader point, and it is an important one, because it's actually to voters rather than parliamentarians, is that this Change Labour Party, with this national project, is a place where reasonably minded people can feel that it is a project for them, notwithstanding how they may have voted in the past. Thank you very much. I've got Archie from The Independent.
Given that you said they'll get a few hundred people off to Rwanda before the election, why would you not bring them back? Do you think it's fair to leave them there? And what will happen to them after you've scrapped the Rwanda scheme?
Well, look, we're going to scrap the scheme, but we're not interested then repatriating and people bringing people back. We will scrap the scheme and we'll focus on the command and the powers that I've set out this morning. And Chloe from The Eye. Chloe.
Thank you, Keir. Chloe Chaplin from The Eye newspaper. A lot of the plans you set out today are pinned on Labour hoping it can negotiate closer cooperation between the UK and its European neighbours. What conversations have you had with European partners on this, and have you had any commitments or assurances, or is this just all based on hope?
Well, some of it can easily be done without any further agreements with Europe, so setting up the command doesn't require us to have agreed anything with Europe or anybody else. That is a way of bringing together, coordinating, giving a central drive to and increasing the powers and resources of what we have here in this country. And just to be clear about that, it's making sure those that are operating here in this country at the border, those that are operating upstream, the intelligence services, prosecutors operating upstream, are all working together. So that can be done without that agreement. The new powers that I've set out are about legislation in this country that can be done, drawing on some of the powers we use against would-be terrorists, as I've set out, whether that's tracing money, monitoring movements, etc. I do think that we should seek a security agreement with the EU, and that's why I went to The Hague with Yvette to have those discussions. That is about coordinating, sharing our data. It's about joint investigations and making sure the UK can lead joint investigations. That's hugely important because we're very, very good at this. But at the moment, we can't do it in the most effective way. I am confident that if we're serious about this, we can get the agreement that we need because this is a shared challenge and these are shared solutions. But that's why I already went to The Hague some time ago now, to have those preliminary discussions about how we might make this work better. Thank you all very much indeed. I'm sorry it's hot in here, but we can now all go outside. Thank you so much. Thank you.